Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Six minutes after the hour, Jay Martin, in for Tom Hartman, and good morning. It's, or I should say good evening, or whatever it is, good afternoon, or wherever you are, whatever's going on. It's nice to have you along. It is Friday, so we're getting ready to go on the weekend. And joining me is the world's smartest man, David Sirota, who appears on my show between 6 and 10 in the morning, Mountain Standard Time, here in Denver, Colorado, where this is coming to you from. We're coming to you from AM 760, Progressive Talk. David, good morning.
Hey, Jay, how you doing?
All right, after we've already done an hour together on my show, now we'll start over and pretend that we're just getting together.
Hey, good morning, Jay, how you doing?
Yeah, for the first time. Well, you know, it's the magic of radio and all that stuff. All right, here's the phone number, 1-866 303-2770. That's 1-866-303-2270. And feel free to call in anytime. We figured since this was Friday, we would just keep it loose and give you a chance to just talk about whatever it is that might be on your mind. And David and I were in a spirited discussion before the show started, and we'll kind of carry it over into this, about the auto situation and whatever terminology you want to use, bailout, recovery, loans. Actually, what they're really asking for is they're asking for loans is really what they're asking. And a lot of people use the term bailout or recovery, and that's not really being accurate. They're asking for loans, which then they intend to pay off. My feeling about it is that we shouldn't give them the money, that if we give them the money, we should have heavy, heavy ropes attached, not strings. And when I talk about that is I'd like to see us buy into the auto companies.
Well, Democrats are floating that idea of having an ownership stake.
Right.
And I think that's a good idea. I think it's a good idea for three reasons. One, you want to get a return on your investment. Two, you want to have ownership leverage to force change in the industry. Right? If you have an ownership stake, you have some leverage to change your business practices. And three, I think that the government is more liable, certainly not guaranteed, but more liable to protect workers in this auto industry transition than simply a vulture like a Gordon Gekko having more ownership stake. You know, I mean, as opposed to the, private industry only calling the shots on this, workers may have something more of a friend in a progressive government.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, what you don't want is you don't want somebody to come in who's a grave dancer,
right,
whose idea is to either break the company up or turn a profit with it and then deal it off to somebody. And if we have ownership stake in the company, here's one thing's for sure. Look, we've been ranting and raving, and I'm not the biggest green guy on the planet. As a matter of fact, I'm hopelessly in love with the internal combustion engine. And I know, it's sick. I'm sorry. It's sick. I'm for everything else. I mean, I want solar panels in my house. I want to be off the grid. That's my goal in the next couple of years. But I never met an internal combustion engine that I didn't love. I'm so bad that I like the smell of gasoline and fuel. But here's the thing. We've sat here for years and years and years. And we've griped about CAFE standards. We've griped about every other thing that the auto industry has fought. Airbags, seat belts, anything you can think of, right?
Right.
They've fought us tooth and nail.
Right.
Healthcare.
Yep.
Nationalized healthcare, everything. They've fought us, right?
Absolutely.
Now, if we buy into this and what we do is we get a stake at the table, then what ends up happening there is simply this. they can't make policy. They can't do anything without our okay and our directive. So in other words, they can have all the lobbyists they want to go to Capitol Hill and make all the statements they want. But you know what? We get a voting share into what's going on. We nix the lobbyists.
But that's the key, though. Hold on. Let me just stop you. That's the key that needs that. That's got to be the difference. That's got to be the difference here, which is that in the Wall Street bailout, they said they were getting us ownership stakes. Remember that?
Right, yeah.
But they bought shares of stock that were non-voting shares of stock.
Well, we don't do that, though.
I sure hope we don't do that with the automaker bailout. It was a mistake for Paulson to do that. Actually, I shouldn't say mistake. It was deliberate that Paulson did
that. Well, Paulson needs to go away.
Right. I mean, Paulson didn't buy ownership. Didn't buy voting shares because he didn't want his pals on Wall Street to have to deal with government exerting leverage over them. So I hope for our country's sake that if we go forward with this rescue bailout, whatever you want to call it, of the automaking industry, that we get those voting shares.
Well, look, let's just keep our fingers crossed that Lawrence Summers or what's his name? Rubin?
Yeah, Bob Rubin.
Yeah, let's hope they don't end up as Treasury Secretary.
Fingers crossed.
You know, because if they end up as a Treasury Secretary, particularly Lawrence, who's an ex-Goldman Sachs person, if we end up with him as a Treasury Secretary, we're in deep trouble. This isn't going to work.
That's exactly right. Now, to his credit, Summers has changed his tune. Rubin hasn't. Summers has changed his tune over the last year, writing a number of op-eds of all places, the Financial Times. Now, what's interesting about this, and I've got an article coming out in these Times next month about this, is that, yeah, okay, Larry Summers is angling for Treasury Secretary, right?
Yeah, he is.
He absolutely is. And Treasury Secretary tends to be one of those offices that is sort of owned, unfortunately, by the establishment. I mean, it's not, you don't really run a grassroots campaign to get appointed Treasury Secretary. It's usually like you get the support of corporate executives, economists, et cetera, et cetera. What's interesting about this is that over the last year, Summers has clearly been campaigning for that office with these Financial Times op-eds. And these Financial Times op-eds have been far to the left, far more progressive than his previous statements. So I agree that it's been that I don't want him to be Treasury Secretary, but what it says is that he recognizes that even elite establishment opinion has shifted on some of these issues, because that's how he's campaigning for the office. Again, I hope he's not the Treasury Secretary.
Yeah, what is it about me? Is it me? Am I sick? But I don't trust him.
I don't trust him either. But what I'm saying is that if he's campaigning for Treasury Secretary by talking about regulation and talking about an economic stimulus package, then that says to me that I don't want him to be Treasury Secretary because I don't trust him, but it says to me that he's reflecting a broader shift in how the elite establishment thinks about these things. And you know what? That's a good thing. That's reflective of the pressure that people have been putting on our government through elections and through organizing.
Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly about that. I think you're absolutely correct. I just hope that if we do this, and I think we should, because we can't afford not to, because you can't put 1 million to 2 million people out on the streets, I just hope we do it the right way and that we do get voting shares. Because if we get voting shares, then we're in the situation where we can get in the driver's seat. And then eventually, when these companies are turned around and things get better, then we can take it and we can sell off our shares and the taxpayers make a profit.
That's right. That's the key here. Now, of course, this will be claimed as being uncharted territory.
Well, yeah, of course they'll grow. And you know, you'll also get the claims of, oh, okay, this is socialism.
Exactly, it's uncharted territory. Yeah. This is not what America is.
You know, who are you here sitting in for Tom Hartman, and why are you acting like Hugo Chavez?
Right, but I wrote a column about this a couple weeks ago about how socialism in the United States is as old as the Pentagon and the Patent Office, and those are deliberate examples. Think about that. The Pentagon spends, what is it, $600-700 billion dollars a year, a huge amount which is just handed over to defense contractors. You know, the Patent Office creates a government-sanctioned monopoly for people's inventions.
Right.
This is socialism. So the idea that we haven't had this kind of market intervention before is ridiculous. The difference is that we haven't had this kind of market intervention, you know, on behalf of most people. right? Usually we intervene in the market to help a small number of very wealthy political donors. Now we're having some market interventions, or we're considering, I don't think the bailout was this, the Wall Street bailout was this, but we're considering having market interventions that actually have millions and millions of blue-collar workers in mind. So I guess in that sense, it would be different, it would be new, and if it's executed properly, I don't think it's such a bad thing. The question isn't whether we should have socialism or we shouldn't have socialism. We already have socialism in one form. The question is, who should that socialism work for?
That's exactly right. I mean, this business about how we do, we don't, we do, we don't, we do, we don't. You know what? We do. We always have had.
Right.
But it's just, you know, it's how it's set up. J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman, along with the world's smartest man, David Sirota, at least for the first part of the show. This is Air America Radio.
You're listening to J. Marvin, filling in on the Tom Hartman program.
J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman, who is on the Air America cruise. This is the Tom Hartman Show, 1-866-303-2270. This show coming to you from AM 760, Progressive Talk in Denver, Colorado. With me, David Sirota, whose book is The Uprising, and who is all over the place. I mean, how many other publications do you contribute to?
Well, I'm the senior editor at In These Times magazine, which I encourage everybody to check out and subscribe to.
I just took out a subscription.
It's a great magazine. If I do say so myself, but it really is a very good magazine, very progressive, and much more of an outside perspective, not sort of only DC focused. So I do that. I write my column. I'm working on another book proposal. We gotta struggle in this economy to do as many things as you can to get by.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking about getting a moonlighting job. Okay. Let's go to the phone. Do you want to take some calls?
Yeah, let's take some calls. Yeah.
All right, let's go to Rick in Chicago. Rick, you're on.
Yes, I'm listening to mostly a progressive talk radio, and everybody's beating up on the auto companies. Is it any wonder that they don't have fuel-efficient cars? And we've had 8 years of an oil presidency. Even now, the party's talking about drill, baby, drill. In Europe, where the government support their auto companies and other places, these same companies make fuel-efficient cars that they can't bring here because of our regulation standards here. That you could buy a hydrogen-powered bus from Ford today. Their cars here, you go to the auto show in California, you could see hybrid cars. I think you're too hard on the car companies. The government sets the climate for the automobile companies. And in Japan, there's no problem with financing. These governments support their car companies. Our car companies are left out there like
our
Olympic athletes.
All right, let's let David answer that, and then I'll answer it, too. Go ahead, David.
Well, I mean, I think the auto companies have – the management of the auto companies have some blame. They have not – kept up with the times. There was Honda and Toyota have proven that there is a market clearly for fuel efficient vehicles, and they made a lot of the investments needed to do that. But I think you're right. I mean, I think that it's not just the car company's fault. I think that the Congress, for instance, didn't set fuel efficiency standards to essentially equalize the playing field and force them along. I think that it's a comprehensive problem. It's a problem where a lot of different actors have been negligent. And I think the bottom line here is that I think lots of progressives believe that it's not a good idea to allow this industry to go out of business here in the United States because it employs a huge amount of people, and that this industry, I think, can be reformed to be quite profitable. Look, there's a history in the world during times of economic transition where industrialized countries have had to essentially shelter parts of their industry to help those industries along. You know, I mean, this is the story of South Korea, for instance, the South Korean economic miracle, right? At times of economic transition, that government has had to essentially shelter or support parts of it temporarily.
That's
and there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't anything wrong with it. And the other thing is, Rick, I don't think anybody's beating up on them unfairly. I think what they're doing is, and they have every right to do it, is they're calling into question their practices and the management practices and the decisions that have gone on, where the American operating model in most companies is to look for the short term, get as much money as you can up front, never lay for the long term. And the companies that are really successful, which all seem to be overseas, a lot of them, is that they're there to stay, and they're looking 5, 10, 15 years down the road. And
just don't throw out the baby with the bathwater.
Well, no, nobody's saying that they should crash. I mean, we're both against that. I'm for, as I said before, I'm for the United States government buying in and getting a voting share so we can get out of these companies what we need, and it stops lobbyists dead in their tracks from running to Capitol Hill, which they've been doing, for years and years. I mean, you used to
absolutely
work there. And they thwart every measure that we tried.
And I will say this.
We just need to invest in it and nationally. Quit being afraid of socialism, because all governments, as you said,
that's right,
invest in their local
workers. You got it. Rick, thanks, man. I appreciate the call. Yeah, I'm not scared of socialism at all. As a matter of fact, I consider myself to be a democratic socialist.
We already live in a socialist country. Everyone has to recognize that. Whether you like it or not, this country has been a form of socialism for a long time. It's been a form of corporate socialism. We socialize the risk, the private risk.
That's right.
And we allow the profits to be privatized. What we're debating now is maybe flipping that around a little bit. You know, we socialize some of the benefits, too. That's really what we're debating here. It's not whether we have socialism or not. It's what kind.
No, but the right will get into that whole argument with you about, one, it's the workers' faults, and two, oh, my God, we can't have socialism unless it's socialism for their rich buddies. Now, if they have socialism for their rich buddies, that's okay. But socialism for you and I is terrible. And if you're old enough to remember this, you know, they cough up these, and McCain was doing this, which was a stupid thing. They cough up these images of, like, oh, socialism? Well, bring out the Internationale and let's all go communist.
That's right.
All right, Jay Marvin in for Tom Hartman on The Tom Hartman Show. And this, of course, is Air America.
This is Jay Marvin, guest hosting on The Tom Hartman Program.
Discussion, dissent, and disagreement. Jay Marvin in for Tom Hartman. Tom's off on the Air America cruise. 1-866-303-2270. My special guest this hour, and he usually is on my show on AM 760 Progressive Talk from Denver, Colorado. It's the one and only David Sirota, world's smartest man, author of the book Uprising. Let's take some more calls.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Let's go to James in New Paltz, New York. Did I say that right, James?
Yes, you did. New Paltz is we're a unique county. We were settled by the Dutch, not by the English, but that's
right.
Another story. Well, good
right.
morning, gentlemen.
Hold on. I want to ask one other question. Didn't they used to make China or something there?
China?
Yeah,
that's
like
Corning. Isn't that Corning?
So you're thinking of Corning, New York. That's further upstate.
Oh, okay.
No, Corning,
all right. I'm sorry. Go ahead, James.
I was just thinking of a possible model to make this work. Now, I work for the government, and I'm in sort of a regulatory capacity, and I know what we do. When we have situations, we go to these people and say, you're out of compliance, there's a problem here, you need to give us a plan of correction or some, tell us what action steps you're going to take. And maybe it means giving up their jets or downsizing their management or doing something that we could to say, okay, we've taken these steps, or maybe work the assembly line or the engineering into it. And then we might be able to go to the American people and say, look, they've agreed to do A, B, C, D, E, now let us do this to sort of help them along. It might be better, we might be able to sell it better and at least come up with something that works. I mean, I guess one of the things that confuses me, I think in Germany, for example, like with the Daimler-Benz and a lot of these companies, the engineers have a much more, their status in the organization is much higher than in America. Now, I could be wrong, but that's my understanding.
No. Let me tell you something. When it comes to Mercedes, when it comes to Daimler, when it comes to Porsche, when it comes to Ferrari, when it comes to Alfa Romeo, when it comes to these companies, it is a badge of honor to be able to work at these places, and the workers get treated extremely well. For instance, you can't get a car built, or if you've ordered one, all work stops. For instance, with Porsche, all work stops in, I believe it's July, because the workers routinely get a month off. That's routinely you get a month off. Now, do you know of any employers in this country that would give you 4 weeks off just because you started working there, even if you'd only been there 6 months?
I don't think so.
No. So those jobs are hard to get, and people are happy to get them because they're taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that that's the big difference. And also, you're right. The engineers and the people like that are hold a higher position, and they're also extremely, extremely quality conscious. But you know what? American car dealers are getting that way, too. They make good cars. The trouble is they have this rep that is just kind of hung over from the 60s and 70s and even into the 80s when they didn't make good automobiles. But now they're making really, really good quality cars. And, for instance, when you go look at their, let's say, their service departments, they used to have a very, very, very high warranty claim ratio. Now the warranty claim ratio is way, way down. It's lower than it's ever been. It's down, I think, like something like maybe about 14%, because the warranties run longer and the cars run better, and they don't have to go through what they went through, say, 30 years ago.
Interesting. I know, like, we used to have a Ford Taurus, and eventually it kind of wore out, and my wife bought a Hyundai Sonata, and I hate to say it, it's a beautifully well-run, well-maintained machine.
Well, the American car makers are making good vehicles. The problem is we just have to turn around the working model. James, thanks. I appreciate the call. David, any input on this?
No, I completely agree with you. I mean, you're absolutely right. Usually you and I are tangling, but I second your opinion.
Well, you know how crazy I am about cars.
I know.
So
I wouldn't dare cross you on discussion of car engineering.
Well, no, I mean, I don't know all that much, but I go out and test drive a lot of automobiles just because I like to see what's going on. I look into them and I, you know, check what's happening and I read about them. And the fact is that Americans are making good cars. The trouble is that the business model is not right and they're late to the party.
Well, clearly we know that Americans can make good cars because there are thousands of Americans, for instance, that make some of the best cars that are not employed by
American-owned
companies. I mean, Subaru,
yeah.
I think Honda produces a lot of...
Toyota.
They've got a lot of plants all over the country. Now, I agree that we want as many sort of domestic-owned car companies as we can have, but it's clearly not that American workers are somehow unable to produce fuel-efficient vehicles.
No, but that's what the right wing shops. That it's always the American workers' fault, and that somehow it always falls back on us because we're lazy. And you get this about unions. Oh, they're lazy and they sandbag and they never get. And that, you know what? That's simply not true. And when I've talked to people about unions, and I'll ask them about, well, listen, what union were you a member of? No, I'm not a member of a union. Well, then how would you know?
Right.
Well, you know because they're getting it off CNN and Fox News and they're reading it in the Wall Street Journal.
Of course.
Or the editorial part of their local newspaper, which is anti-labor union.
Right.
So they're dealing in propagated falsehoods. All right, let's go to Lou in Orlando. Lou, you're on.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, Lou. How are you?
It's ironic. I'm the vice president of Communication Workers of America, Local 3108 in Orlando, and I am a digital tech with AT&T, highly skilled at my job for 17 years. I get 4 weeks vacation because the union negotiated for me. I get great medical benefits because of the union. My wife happens to be Swedish. I am a converted social capitalist. I was a Reagan Democrat. I've gone so far to the left, my family can't recognize me. But after living in Sweden for about 2 years, before I came back to the States after getting out of the Marine Corps, my whole brain cell group got rehoused in a much better way. Because when I was young, it was about how much can we kill and destroy. Hoorah, I was a former Marine. And then I got out of the Corps, went and lived in Europe, and it was like, oh, my God, this is what civilization is. There is no ghettos in Scandinavia, period. They take care of their infirm. They take care of the people that can't take care of themselves. You don't see bums begging on the corner. The alcoholics in Sweden are brought in at night so they don't freeze. They get a room with a toilet and a small kitchenette, but they are treated like human beings. And we don't treat our own citizens like human beings.
No, and you know what? We're big, and David, I think you'd agree with me on this. We're big into American exceptionalism. Like, in other words, all the ideas, if they don't come from America, they aren't any good. And, you know, we're the greatest country in the world, and arguably we are. But even if you're the greatest country in the world, you got to take ideas from the outside. So we have these debates about health care. We have these debates about other things where you sit there and say, well, wait a minute. What about this country? What about what's going on there? And then the answer will always be, well, you know, you have that. You can't pick your own doctor.
Well, that's because they haven't lived there. You made the point before. Ask the guy that bashes unions, was he ever in a labor union? They're jealous. They wish they had the pay and benefits that I have. By the way, I have got to do a quota and a quality number that's huge. I'm competing against the cable and the satellite industry. If I don't do my job well, I don't have a job.
Well,
so
that,
it's all a myth.
God bless you, man, and God bless all union workers, and I think the whole country ought to be unionized.
In Sweden and Europe, let's put it, you talk about Mercedes, you talk about Porsche, 100% union organized.
Oh, yeah.
The first and second and like third tier managers have professional union guilds to represent them. The only non-union people, like the board of directors, the higher-up VPs, and the owners. Everybody there has some kind of labor guild to protect them and to negotiate on their behalf. It's a total Wall Street corporate myth, you know, to put the worker in his place here. Oh, don't speak up. My wife just didn't want to, I got a part-time job now, and she had to have like a two-page signed thing that she wouldn't join a labor union. It was huge. It was so funny.
That ought to be illegal. Lou, thank you. I appreciate the call. David?
I mean, he's completely right that the problem in our country is not that we have too much union power. The problem in this country, we have too little union power. And I've said this, I say it over and over again when I come on your show, which is that the strongest advance of our economy, the strongest expansion of our economy took place when unions were at their highest peak of union density. It was 35% of the country was unionized. So the idea that more unions is bad for the economy is simply negated by basic facts about our economy and our history.
See, through the corporate media, somehow we've lost control of all of this. And corporate America has been working on this for years and years and years. And now, as progressives, we need to turn around and we need to work on it and undoing what they have done. That's why I'm always on the air talking about the consolidation of the media. That's why I'm always on the air on these topics, because he who controls the media, you know, he who controls the media controls the culture of the country.
Controls the parameters of what's acceptable and not acceptable
debate. And we need to rectify the debate. We definitely need to do that. Jay Marvin, in for Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Show on Air America.
You're listening to guest host Jay Marvin, filling in for Tom Hartman.
I've always wanted to say this on national radio. J. Marvin, Radio Rebelde. J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman is on the Air America cruise. David Sirota joining us in this first part of the show. All right, you want to go back and take some more calls?
Yeah, for sure.
I always ask you permission, but it's 1-866.
I know, it's your show.
I know, it's 1-866-303-2270. Actually, it's Tom's. I'm just kind of living here for the day. And this is coming to you from AM 760 Progressive Talk in Denver, Colorado. Not outer space. Let's go to James in El Sobrante, California. James.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Listen, pretty good, thank you. Just having my second cup of coffee. I don't do anything before I have my coffee. You know?
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Me too.
So I really liked your guys' intro. You know, the first few minutes of your show where you're setting things up about this discussion about the you know, the bailout and everything. And I like all the ideas that are being floated out there as far as, like, people having more control over what's going on through, like, maybe ownership of stock and so forth, and, you know, through the government or representatives in government, you know, putting some pressure on, you know, business leaders and so forth. But, you know, I think right now what we really need is a much more political approach, and I think what we need to look out for is that the opposition is going to claim that what we're trying to do is, quote-unquote, redistribute wealth. I think what we need to emphasize is that what we're actually trying to do is make a growth economy work for the average person so that they don't wind up in a situation where one day they wake up and their savings for their retirement, their 401ks, are worth half of what they were yesterday. And meanwhile, the people that are going up and begging in front of Congress are getting their hundreds of billions of dollars so that they can go and then reinvest that money in, you know, other places of the world where they don't have to pay, you know, living wages to people.
I think those people who do that, who make those, have those parachutes and do this, excuse me, do this stuff, I think they're moral criminals.
They are.
They're moral criminals. They're thieves, essentially. And look at the way the economy is now. I've got a ton of friends who have called me and said, well, my 401k or my ESOP's gone. I guess I'll have to work till I'm 80.
I know. I've never lived in a time where it's been, at least psychologically, it's felt this stressful. I mean, everybody is really sort of fastening their seatbelts, trying to buckle down as much as possible. And the scary part about it is that you can buckle in as much as you want. But if your car is going over the cliff, that's how it feels, and it's really scary.
Okay. I got. Okay, you know, in this kind of situation, what makes people feel better is when they feel that, you know, they can have some faith in humanity and all that. Okay, there's something coming up called the Employee Free Choice Act.
Oh yeah, I've seen the ads for that too.
I know. People of this country want to be members of unions. The reason that the unions have been having such a hard time in this country, this is the seat of this type of predatory capitalism where somebody can go in and an employer can favor the minority of employees that don't want a union, against, you know, the rest of the employees that definitely do want a union for sure. I know that from personal experience.
Well, you don't just have to know that from personal experience. They've done polling on this. I mean, what is it, 54-55% of Americans who are not part of unions say that they would love to join one if they could. The operative word there is they could. They understand, I think a lot of people understand, that wanting to join a union and being able to is a wholly different thing. That if you try to, right now, you face so much retribution. You can get fired. You can get, you know, transferred to an undesirable division.
Yeah, which is what Walmart does. It transfers people around and makes their lives miserable. And, we should be able to unionize. There's no question about that. And the idea that, oh, the union bosses are going to listen. Let me tell you, I'll tell you a quick story here. We had an amendment here on the Colorado ballot. It was amendment number 46. It was a right to work amendment. Okay. I open up the newspaper one day, Jeremy, the Denver Post. There's an ad with this woman named Rosa, the laundry worker, and all these claims about how, well, I'm being harassed by union thugs and they're getting down on my case. So I call I look up on the internet. I find out who's behind this. I call them and I say, hey, my name's Jay Marvin. I'm from AM 760 Progressive Talk. You know, can I find out how to interview Rosa, the laundry worker? oh, I'm sorry, she's not talking to anybody because there have been threats on her life. I said, well, you know, we're not going to use her last name. I'm not going to say that it's Rosa, the laundry worker from, you know, from wherever, Oakland, California, you know, San Francisco. I'm not going to say that. They wouldn't give me the location of Rosa, the laundry worker. And then I asked them, I said, well, is she at least a Colorado resident? Well, they wouldn't give me any information on that. You know why? Because what they were doing is they were perpetrating fraud on the Colorado public. That's what they were doing.
And Colorado smartened up and voted that amendment down.
So, you know, these people play all kinds of games. James, thanks. Thank you for the call. They play, you know, Rose of the Line, and it's the Independence Institute, by the way, here in Colorado. Okay, and a guy by the name of John Caldera. Okay, where is Rosa the laundry worker? I got on the air and kept saying, Caldera, produce Rosa the laundry worker. Well, Rosa never gave me a call because I got a feeling there is no Rosa.
Yeah, I got that feeling too. I mean, these guys will play dirty, and I tell you something, when that Employee Free Choice Act comes up in Congress.
All hands on deck against that.
The Chamber of Commerce, the head of the Chamber of Commerce said it's going to be Armageddon, that they are going to pull out every single stop that they can to prevent that bill from passing the business community. It's going to be a brawl.
Well, then we go to the barricades, too.
That's right. I know.
I mean, we got to put pressure on our elected representatives
to do
the right thing.
They're going to be under enormous pressure.
They're already running ads.
I know.
They're already like running ads.
Preemptively.
Yes.
Yeah.
They want this to happen. You know, they want this to happen. Well, it's the same thing in radio. Reason Radio has voice tracking going on and has so much syndication and has basically, for the most part, is pretty bland and boring, is because management has been running a war against talent for years, and now finally through technology they've finally gotten their way, and they're phasing us out, and they're doing it because consolidation.
Microcosm of what's going on in the rest of the economy.
Well, we are the auto industry. I mean, you don't have any place to walk across the street. It used to be in the old days you could just tell the management, hey, and this is not a kickstand for your nose, and I'll see you later. Now, nowhere. Unemployment line. I'm getting ready to work at Barnes & Noble, selling books.
What about writing? You should write books.
Well, I'm working on that, too. I'm working on my novel. But, you know, I wouldn't mind working at Borders or Barnes & Noble. They don't pay anything, but I wouldn't mind working there.
And you don't have a lot of worker rights. I think Borders has had some union problems.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, how about the Tattered Cover here locally?
That's a great store.
Or any independent bookstore near you. And if you're in the anywhere around Powell's, that's another place you can go.
Oh, yeah. That is one of the best.
Yep. Any of those places. I don't know how we got off on books. Are you sticking around for the next hour or are you leaving?
I got to go.
All right. David, thank you, man.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
All right. Appreciate it. We'll continue with more of this. Jay Marvin in for Tom Hartman. And this is the Tom Hartman Show. And this is Air America.
You're listening to Jay Marvin, filling in on the Tom Hartman Program.
Jay Marvin in for Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Show. Tom's off on the Air America cruise, and I thank Tom for letting me sit in and do this. The show coming to you from AM 760, Progressive Talk in Denver, Boulder, Colorado. 1-866-303-2270. We've been talking about the auto rescue or bailout plan or whatever you want to call it, but we don't have to talk about that. We can talk about really anything you want to talk about. It's fine with me because it's Friday, and what the heck? And I thank Tom. I just said that, didn't I? I thank Tom for letting me sit in. And I'll probably say that 20 more times before the hour's out. Anyway, let's get to some more calls because there's a bunch of you hanging on, and I appreciate your patience. Let's go to Mitch in Sycamore, Illinois. Mitch, hi.
Well, thanks, Jay.
Sure.
Say, there's a lot of talk about the incredible high price that they pay for hourly wage for the workers on the plant floors and of the auto companies, but most people don't realize that the majority of them hired in the last 3 years hardly get any pay at all, and most of them have had to forego benefits just to get the job. On the other side, while the workers are working in the summer, sometimes 110-degree heat, you know, with the factory not being air-conditioned and all, on the front side of the building with just a few executives, there'll be $250,000 worth of air conditioning. And the electricity, they support that and all, free soup, free coffee, everything, then the benefits for the people on that side are hardly ever mentioned.
Well, we have a terrible habit in this country, and I don't know why we do it. Well, I do know why we do it. But you'd think people would wake up. But we have a terrible habit in this country. And you know what that habit is? We eat our own. In other words, for most of us, we don't make the kind of salaries that these CEOs make. We don't get the kind of returns that a lot of these shareholders used to get, which they don't get anymore. But our deal is like unions are bad. It's all the workers' fault. I mean, listen to the spin that's going on from the chattering classes in the media. It's all our fault. It's all those auto workers' fault that they're in the situation they're in. Well, that's absolute and complete nonsense. And then the other thing is, in order to cure the situation, what they want to do is they want to turn around and they want to attack the American worker. So it's the American worker's fault. And I maintain that we have got to stop that practice.
Well, even a low level executive that gets two trips to Detroit on an aircraft per month to go to begin to see whatever kind of meeting they have, every 3 or 4 months they get enough air miles that they get a free vacation to the Caribbean or Hawaii or Japan. You know, and these are the same people that you get the interviews saying, it's horrible how these people went all through these free gifts.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's exactly right. So what it amounts to is it amounts to this kind of a deal. Do as I say, not as I do. And the minute anything goes wrong, then you got to go after the most vulnerable class of people, which are the workers. And that's absolutely, I'm telling you, that's absolutely ridiculous. I keep repeating this. And you'd think now with the way the economy is, you think now with the things that have gone on, you think that people would wake up, that they would realize that this Reaganomics is a joke. I mean, this guy, Arthur, I think his name is Arthur Laffer, with the Laffer curve. There's a video floating around on YouTube somewhere of him about a year before all of this happened, predicting that nothing was going to go on and that everything was okay. And how right did he turn out to be? Well, he turned out to be absolutely wrong. So the deal is, don't shop this whole trickle-down Reaganomics thing to me, and don't blame the workers. Put the blame where it really belongs.
Also, with the trickle-down, right now the tier 33 through tier 40 automobile manufacturers, those people who supply the suppliers who supply the suppliers, they're all being held hostage by the big three saying, hey, if we don't get this bailout, those people are going to be out of work and the people that supply them are going to be out of work. Well, in the last 6 months, not even on the record yet, not even being counted with every bit of money they're asking for, is the fact that every year each of the big three requires 7 to 10% reduction in cost, and these tier 3 through 40s have done it by offshoring all of their work. The people that they're trying to protect from work have already lost their jobs. Those factories are already shut down, and that's why we don't have money to buy cars. Nobody is supplying paper for business, pencils. If you're, you know, even, you know, the little restaurants in the area, they're all out of business.
Well,
all of their tier 3 through tier 40 have gone offshore.
Well, that's, you know what, that's the other side of the coin. You want to revive the economy, then you better put money in people's pockets so they'll put money in businesses' pockets, not sprinkle cash on the top of the pyramid and expect that the crumbs get down to the bottom of the pyramid. Mitch, thank you. Thank you for the call. 1-866-303-2270. Let's go to David in Youngstown, Ohio. David, hi.
Hi, Jay. And we missed you in Chicago.
Thank you.
LS 890 days.
Oh, thank you. You're very kind. Thanks.
I can't really say too much more than what everybody else has said. The only thing I'd like to hear is stop calling it a bailout and simply as a rescue. And I think we need to not just take government control, but turn that government control over to the employees. whatever the government buys in stock, sell it back to the employee, let them have a major seat in running these companies.
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea, too. You know what? I'm in favor of anything where we can get a hold of the auto companies and get them to do, get them to do what they should do. That's number one. And number two, I believe that the only way to fix the economy is to start from the bottom and go up, not the other way around.
You're absolutely right. And unfortunately, Bush Sr. was right when he called it voodoo economics.
Yeah, isn't it funny how he called it that, and then all of a sudden when he got picked as VP, he dropped that mantra?
Well, he knew where his bread was buttered.
Yeah, well, wouldn't you like to go to him today and ask him what he thinks?
I'd like to hear what he thinks of his son.
You know what? It's funny you should bring that up. Mary and I were talking about that last night. She said to me, "You can't tell me that George and Barbara Bush are not ashamed of their son, because he's probably going to go down as the worst president we've ever had." David, thank you. Thanks so much for the call. Let's move to Ken in Thousand Oaks, California. Ken, hi, you're on.
Yes. You know, the whole problem started with Wall Street, with the banksters and the corporados. They put pressure on auto companies like they do on all companies to maximize profits, to cut costs. And the auto company executives, their concern is not the customer or the quality of the product. Their concern is on the next quarter's bottom line and the increase in price share. We used to hear this phrase, they made 8 cents. Dividend, 8 cents a share dividend. The street was expecting 9 cents. Well, who's the street? That's Wall Street dictating to the auto company and making sure that the people who become executives in all these companies, not just auto companies, are finance people. They're not product people. They're not customer people. They're not community people.
Well, that's right. That's right. And in essence, you're right about that. And along with that, the way things work out is simply this, that their only interest is themselves, and they have no allegiance whatsoever to their community. They have no allegiance to their state. They have no allegiance to their country. They're interested only in themselves and their own behavior and rewarding their friends. And what ends up happening is, like I've said time and time again, who gets drilled? Well, you and I do.
There was a book a number of years ago by David Halberstam called The Reckoning. It's a thousand page book, and it chronicles the rise of the Japanese auto industry from the ashes of World War II and the commensurate decline of our auto industry. How did it happen that 30 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the Japanese were making better and more successful cars than we were?
Because their style of management is totally different than our style of management. Their style of planning is totally different than our style of planning. That's the reason it turned out to be that way, because they look at the long run, not the short run. And we've got something else that goes on in this country, too, which is really tough. And that is, if you're a publicly traded company, your first responsibility is to make money for your shareholders, and everything else goes out the window. So what they want is, they want instant profit, and they want it now, and they're very restless. And if we don't give it to them, then they get angry. Thank you, Ken. Appreciate the call. Thank you so much. 1-866-303-2270. And Jay Marvin sitting in for Tom Hartman, who's off on the Air America cruise. And, boy, you're more than welcome to call up with anything you want to talk about. That's fine with me. This is the Tom Hartman Show, and this is Air America Radio.
You're listening to Jay Marvin, filling in on the Tom Hartman Program.
An immediate answer to all the screaming, yelling, talking heads on the radio, you people. Jay Marvin in for Tom Hartman. Tom's on the Air America cruise, and so he's kind enough to let me sit in today. 1-866-303-2270. And we don't have to talk about the car industry thing all Friday morning. We don't have to, or Friday evening or afternoon or wherever you may be. We don't have to talk about this all. We can go to other things, too. I mean, I got other things I'd talk to you about. For instance, being excited about going into the digital world, I'm now fully and completely hooked into this. I used to not be at all. I'm using an iPod. I'm downloading podcasts. I'm downloading music. And then my latest thing is I've got a Kindle. Does anybody out there have a Kindle? The thing is absolutely amazing. You download books from Amazon.com. It's an Amazon.com Kindle. I'm not plugging them. I'm just saying that I have one of those, and I found some amazing literature on there and blogs that I'm reading. There's not enough digitized books, of course, but they're digitizing more of them slowly but surely, so I'm pretty excited about that. The other thing is it occurred to me that since I'm on all these radio stations, I might as well plug my blog, but I got to explain my blog to you. Don't let your kids read it. It uses some rough language, and I don't mince words, and I'm not saying I'm 100% right all the time because nobody is, and there are a lot of talk show hosts that, you know, that's their whole deal. I'm right, and I'm right all the time. No, I make a lot of wrong statements, but the blog is just an opinion. So you can go check it out at jmarvinblog.com. That's jmarvinblog.com, and there's also a link there to some of my fiction, and also two books that I have out. But the links are, like, really small because, you know, I feel funny about hyping myself. I always have. But go to jmarvinblog.com if you want to read that, which I guess in itself is a hype. Okay, let's get back on the phones here, and let's go to Peter in Salem, Oregon. Pete, you're on.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, man.
You know, I think one thing that might shut these Republicans up about this car bailout is if they did what Iacocca did, and that was put the UAW on the board of directors.
I agree 100%. I agree 100% that it ought to be. Here's who the board of directors ought to be made up of: management, labor, and the American taxpayer in the form that the government gets a voting seat. And if you had those three entities involved, it would be a lot better than it would be if you just went to them and said, here's some money, fix the situation.
But, you know, when Iacocca brought Chrysler back from the brink, that's what he did. And he got immediate concessions because, you know, labor, by the fact that it's an adversarial relationship, labor does not believe management.
Yeah,
and I'm not a union buster. I'm a union supporter. But, you know, I mean, I remember a news conference I saw with Iacocca, and, you know, the UAW did a give back, I think, of about $2 an hour. And some dopey reporter said, well, what are you giving them, you know, for their $2? And he looked at him and he goes, I'm giving them their jobs.
<You know? laughs> Well, didn't Lee Iacocca, didn't he take just like a dollar a year?
Yeah. Well, he took stock options.
All right,
he took stock options instead of cash.
All right, so what about if you went to the leaders of these, of GM, Ford, and Chrysler? Well, Chrysler's privately owned, but you went to GM and Ford and said, okay, here's the other thing.
I think Chrysler and Ford, the Mulally and Nardelli already said they'd go for a dollar a year.
Yeah, and then he also said to them, okay, eventually we'll give you shares. So here's the deal. If we prosper, you prosper. If we lose, you lose.
Exactly.
I mean, the way it's structured now is that the only people who lose on this are the American public and the workforce at these places. Management doesn't lose because management finds its way out, and most CEOs and those kind of things, they get a golden parachute.
I could be wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, you talked about how the board is made up. I think that how it should be made up, and I think that in Japan, labor is part of the board of directors.
I believe that they are.
And you know they and the thing is that, you know, the Japanese, you know, now that they're trading ADRs over here, Toyota Motor and Honda and all those people, they do 90-day financials, but before that they didn't do 90-day financials. They gave out financials every 6 months because they are long vision down the road. We, you know, we're not worried about right now. We're worried about 5 years, 10 years from now.
Yeah.
And management is so short-sighted in this country because they've got stockholders they've got to answer to every 90 days.
Well, see, that's what's killing everything. I mean, it's killing all of the business in this company is that whole fetish for the stockholders and not looking long-term but looking short-term. Pete, thank you. I appreciate the call. And, you know, you've got that going on in the broadcasting industry, too. For those of you living in New York, you know what WABC is. Well, they're part of Citadel. Fareed Suleiman, who's the CEO of Citadel, got, like I believe last year, $11 million. Well, go look up Citadel stock, okay? It closed yesterday, I believe, at like 20 cents a share. Now, how does this guy get $11 million and the stock closes at 20 cents a share? Plus, they have virtually no live talent on most of their radio stations. It's all syndicated. I mean, come on. We need to clean our acts up. J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman, and this is Air America Radio.
This is J. Marvin, guest hosting on the Tom Hartman Program.
Jay Marvin in for Tom Hartman, and I thank Tom for letting me do this. He's on the Air America cruise, so we're together for today. 1-866-303-2270, and nice to have you along. We're basically talking about anything you want to talk about. Most people are stuck on talking about the automobile industry's problems, and that's fine. I don't care about that. I mean, we could talk about that. I mean, I do care about the problem, but I don't care what you talk about. That's fine with me. If you want to get off on other things, that's okay, too. John Turk, who helps me produce my regular show, which runs 6 to 10 Mountain Standard Time here on AM 760 Progressive Talk in the Denver-Boulder area. We were talking off the air about books, so if there's anybody out there who wants to get into that, that's okay, too. We were talking about the second best book to On the Road by Jack Kerouac, and then I was explaining to him that I'm reading this novel called The Dramatist by this guy Ken Bruden, I think is his name, and he's an Irish writer. And it's amazing. This guy's really good. And then I'm also reading this other book about the left by Henri Bernard Lévy. So plenty of good books out there, and not enough people talk about books. So I love to talk about books. You want to talk about books, you want to talk about literature, that's fine, too. All right, back to the phones. Enough of me. Let's go to Debbie in Portland, Oregon. Debbie, hi.
Hi. Is this Jack?
No, it's Jay.
Jay.
You can call me Jeff if that makes you feel better.
I have a lot of Jays in my family. I'm just calling to talk about the – I work for a union, and it amazes me how many Republicans we have that are union people, and they're so – misinformed about the Republicans and who they really are and what they're really doing to this country. And they vote against their own self-interest.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Look, right along that line, I have worked at radio stations that were after stations, that were union stations. The most anti-union people on the air are the conservative talk show hosts, but they're also the first to get in line and ask, what is the union going to do for me?
Exactly. They're willing to take the benefits, but they're not, you know, they're willing to also downgrade them, too. And the thing is, I worked for a company who years ago gave up a lot of benefits for the new people, just like the UAW is doing. And our people don't get to full wage for 18 months, and it takes them a year to get any medical benefits.
Right.
You know, and if we didn't have medical benefits to contend with, if the big corporations didn't have those, you could cut that wage in half that they say they're paying us. Like my company says that we cost them $44 an hour because they're including the medical benefits.
If you took those medical benefits out of there, it would lower the cost, but also you could turn around as a union and ask for more money.
Yeah, but you know, they say we make so much money. I struggled at $21 an hour on a single income until I got married and had a second income that was similar. It's not like $21 is an hour is that much money anymore. And like by the time they take out taxes, I've made $36,000 this year, and they've taken $6,000 just in federal.
You're not the only one who's going through that. I think there are a lot of people that are going through that, and a lot of people in non-union situations are going through that too. It's getting extremely rough these days to make it, even though the price of, for instance, fuel is down, but then everything else is up. And then, you know what? Here's the other thing too that really drives people nuts, or at least it drives me nuts, is that you see all these things going on where, boy, you know, I could get that cheap, but the problem is nobody has any money to do it.
Exactly.
I mean, you can't go out and buy the house of your dreams, even though you see it at a ridiculously low price, because you don't have the money to do it.
Oh no! I just got approved for $180,000, and we went and looked at houses, and I wouldn't let my dog live in those houses for $180,000.
Oh no! The part of the country you live in, you're not going to get anything for $180,000.
No.
No way.
I'd rather just stay and rent. But another thing that drives me crazy about the Republicans, and all during the election this drove me nuts, is they always talk about the Democrats raising taxes and the Republicans are going to lower them. That is so much crap, and people don't even get it. If we would make these companies pay the taxes that they're supposed to pay, we wouldn't even have to raise their taxes. They have so many loopholes, and they don't ever explain that.
Well, they're always skating. You're right about that, and they're always figuring out ways to get around it, even though the IRS would tell you that collections of money from the top 1-4% is bigger than it's ever been. However, if you go look at the statistics and you go check that out, who do you think the IRS spends the majority of their time auditing? Not those people.
Me.
Yeah, that's right. They audit the middle class people. Debbie, thank you. I appreciate the call. I keep saying that all the time. I appreciate the call, but that's from my country music days of being a country music disc jockey. Right? Don't we all have crutches in our speech? Like, you know? I say that too much. And I appreciate. I should say thank you. And that's it. And not say anything more. There's anybody who's listening who has a goo-goo bar, do you? Or grits? All that kind of stuff from the South? Not good for you. But tastes good. Okay, enough of the galloping gourmet here. Let's go to Steve in Milpitas. Steve.
Well, hey, Steve. Hey, Jay. Good morning.
Hi.
Two things real quick. One, there's an excellent book I just finished called The Dark Side by Jane Meyer.
Ooh, I'll have to check that out.
It covers the illegal detention and torture that was practiced by the U.S. government over the last 8 years.
Mm.
The other thing was, you mentioned that you have a device for downloading books into a device.
Yeah,
that's
Kindle.
That's really cool, but I wanted to raise the issue that electronic media is notoriously easy to mess with, and I'm a little worried sometimes that you might download a book and not get the original text of the book. It could be easily, messed with, and
well,
you wouldn't even know the difference.
Yeah, I've thought about that, too. With the Kindle situation, they only charge you $9.95 a book. And then the thing is if you don't get it or something happens, you can get in contact with them, and then what they'll do is they'll resend it to you. But it downloads, it's wireless, and it downloads so fast that it's there within a blink of an eye. And you not only can get books on it, but you can also get your favorite blogs, and you can get newspapers from around the country and around the world. You can also get some magazines. And for me, books are really an important part of my life, so I take a couple of blogs that are dedicated only to books, and so I can read what's out there. And what it's like is it's like having the New York Times book review section updated every couple of days, and I get Paul Krugman's column. So it's really worthwhile. You're right, though, about online security. I mean, I saw a story this morning where the Chinese are being accused of hacking in to corporate computers and also governmental computers, stealing thousands and thousands and thousands of bytes of information.
Uh-huh. It's called a Kindle, right?
It's Kindle. Go to Amazon.com and look, and you'll see it.
Okay, thanks, man.
All right, thanks, Steve. And I don't mean to give Amazon.com a plug. That's not the idea, because they're not paying me. But for me, books are absolutely everything that they're, I mean, I just love books. I love books and I love cars. Okay, I know, I'm not green. But you use a Kindle and it's digitally downloaded, and eventually every book gets digitally downloaded, then we don't have to use paper. So that's a recyclable thing, right? So is that, that's green. Question is it green enough to make up for my other vices, which is the internal combustion engine? I don't know if that is. Let's go to Kevin in Detroit. Kevin, hi.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good.
Yes, sir. Pleasure to meet you. You guys always give a good show.
Well, thanks.
Okay, first of all, it's a real easy way to get out of this dilemma. There's a certain little war that we all know about. I don't want to mention, you know, $10 billion a month, $120 billion a year. Imagine if that money was back in the United States, all the good things we could do with it. More schools, more teachers. And first of all, it's no offense. If I hear one more Republican say the word bailout, I'm going to lose it. What they're going to do, I mean, it just makes common sense. My father worked for Chrysler when Chrysler was going through. Lee Iacocca, with representative, he was a representative then before he became governor, Blanchard. They worked together, got it done, and they paid it back. What's the matter with these Republicans? They think they're going to give the automakers money, and they're not going to pay it back? This is just ridiculous, man, and we need to. And first of all, if I was a member of the Big Three, I wouldn't walk in there like I'm scared. They need to grow some you-know-whats and just go in there and tell them what we need to do.
Yeah, on the other hand, though, taking corporate jets into a congressional hearing, flying corporate jets, claiming that you're poor and pulling that stunt, is not only you're not only going to get the wrath of Congress out of that, but the other side of it is the American public is going to be down on your case. And as far as the Iraq war goes, I'm absolutely with you 100%. We should pull the plug and get out of there immediately. And we need a serious assessment at Afghanistan. Kevin, thanks for the call. 1-866-303-2270. 1-866-303-2270. And it's just really nice to sit in for Tom Hartman and visit with you. J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Show. And this is Air America Radio.
You're listening to guest host Jay Marvin, filling in for Tom Hartman.
Congenial, yet controversial conversation for mature, consenting adults. We don't scream, we just discuss. J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman's on the Air America cruise, so he invited me to sit in for one day, and I'm happy to be here. 1-866-303-2270. We talk about anything you want to talk about. We seem to be focused in on the automobile industry, but whatever it is that you want to get into is fine with me. Let's go to Jack in Burbank. Jack, you're on.
Hi.
Hi, Jack.
Pardon me for the heavy breathing. I'm working still.
Well, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, I'm ahead of the game, maybe. You know, one idea that I haven't heard discussed is the government paying the, let's say, the $2 billion that they say takes to buy GM, for example, and then leasing the assets back to a private company that'll operate it, and where those leases, like the oil leases or mine leases, be priced well enough and high enough so we don't have to pay taxes.
I think the only problem you'd run into with that idea is you'd get people on the right who would say that the idea of us totally and completely buying, say, for instance, GM, that they would say, well, who do you think you are? Hugo Chavez?
No, we're not operating it.
No, I understand that, but I'm talking about the ownership part of it. That would make them crazy. But you know, well, what? Because that's what they would say. They would say, well, wait a minute, what's the difference between that and Hugo Chavez nationalizing oil companies and, you know, like Citgo, and then getting other people to run it?
What I have to say is the kind of ridiculousness of what we currently got is that the people who buy $2 billion worth of stock, for example, they don't own the company. they don't control it. They don't make the call the shots. And that, in my opinion, is about as ridiculous and much of a hoodwink on stockholders as somebody claiming to dislike Hugo Chavez.
Well, the thing is, what I propose that we do is I propose that we buy into it and get enough leverage in there to have a seat along with labor on the board that runs it, and therefore we could then get the car company, GM in this case, or even Ford, both of them, to do what we want them to do in respect to the environment and producing more fuel-efficient automobiles and the way workers are treated. And we could eliminate the deal of these CEOs dragging down big bucks while everybody else down the pyramid is basically getting the screwdriver jammed to them. I mean, to me, that would be the way to do it.
I guess the bottom line is control.
Exactly.
Controlling what they're doing so they don't control us down into a hole.
Right, exactly. If you want to look, we just put the proposition to them like this. Okay, you want our money? Fine. Then what you have to do is you have to concede part control of the company. In other words,
Hugo Chavez is doing down there.
Well, no, in his case with Citgo and the rest of them, he just took the, you know, they just nationalized it. And you can't, you would have a hard time getting that done here.
If it is a democracy government that owns this, then that is one of the most trustworthy corporations I can think of, because every citizen is a shareholder and can control how those assets are used. Now, true, we got the lobbyists and everything that usurp the democracy in this country.
Yeah, but they'd be out of the game at that point.
Huh?
They'd be out of the game at that point. Because, look, the lobbyists for the car companies go and they lobby against CAFE standards. They have lobbied against airbags. They have lobbied against seat belts. They have lobbied against, you know, anything that people have come up with as far as auto safety has gone and as far as efficiency goes. But if the United States government, which is us, theoretically, the taxpayers, if we own a controlling interest in the car business, then we say to the lobbyists, you don't have any clients. You're fired.
Well, to be big enough to do that, those people who scream and cry about government meddling, okay, would prevent that by saying the same thing of Hugo Chavez.
Well, they would, except there's one difference, and you know what the difference is?
Huh.
The difference is that this administration coming up and this Congress is going to have a lot of political capital to get this done, and most people are so worried about the economy. Most people are so upset about the economy, and I know I'm one of them, that you know something? It would be easier to get that done if the taxpayers in this country could see light at the end of the tunnel instead of going back and repeating the same behavior that we've repeated before. And anytime anybody who is a conservative or an independent or whatever the case comes to you and says, okay, listen, you know, we need that won't work and this won't work and that won't work. We need to say to them two things. We need to say to them, number one, okay, if we're wrong, then you know what? Give me your ideas on how to fix the situation. And number two, what do you mean we can't? How about yes, we can and we will? Jack, thanks. Thanks for the call. And look, I didn't even say I appreciate it. But you know, that's what we need. We spend too much time talking about what we can't do in this country. And this is a marvelous country with a lot of really smart, ingenious people. And we can do anything we want to do if we really want to do it bad enough. To quote the line in Sexy Beast, where there's a will, there's a way, and there is, and I can't use that word, way. And we can get this done. Thing is, we keep spending all this amount of time talking about what we can't do. I mean, right-wing radio is filled with this. It's filled with spitting venom. It's filled with all kinds of attacks. And all kinds of like, well, this won't work, and that won't work, and here's why this, and this, and that, and that. You know what? Hey, listen. You know, if you don't have any answers, okay, and you can't contribute anything positive to the conversation, and I'm talking about the Limbaughs and the rest of them, Hannity's and the rest of them. If you can't contribute anything positive to the conversation, then guess what? Get out of the way, because the rest of us in America want to make this the greatest country we can make it, and we can't do it by sitting around and talking about what we can't do. You know, John F. Kennedy stood up and he said, we're going to go to the moon, and we did. Ronald Reagan, who is one of the right's biggest heroes, he said, okay, we're going to put a space station in space, and we're going to do it within a decade, and we did it. Now, why can't Barack Obama stand up and say, we're going to do the following things? We're going to have health care. We're going to fix the economy, and everybody needs to help out. And if he says that, why can't we just go ahead and do it? Why must we always discuss what we can't do instead of talking about what we can do? And I believe Barack Obama is right. Yes, we can, and we will. J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman. Now I'll get down off my soapbox and give you some peace, and we'll take some more calls coming up. This is the Tom Hartman Show, and this is Air America Radio.
You're listening to J. Marvin, filling in on the Tom Hartman Program.
J. Marvin, let me clear my throat here for a second. Hang on. There we go. Well, see, I'm only human. J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Show, and Tom's off on the Air America cruise. So I'm filling in for today. Have no fear, the pain will be over in about 55 minutes. 1-866-303-2270. Let's get back on the phones, because that's what I'm doing today. I'm taking phones calls, and you can talk about anything you want to talk about. So far, we've been pretty much focused on the auto industry problems, and the economy needs help, too. So we've got a lot of challenges facing us in this country, but I think we can overcome all of them given the chance. Let's go to Flo in Sunrise, Florida. Flo, you're high. You're on.
Hi, Jay.
Hi.
I haven't spoke with you in quite a while, but I am concerned about the auto industry because my husband works for a car dealership, and he has to consider all those people. I mean, under this administration, my husband lost his pension. My daughter down here in Florida lost her business and her home. There's 75,000 foreclosures in Florida, and I know three more people that are going to go into foreclosure.
Mm.
So do we really need more people on the unemployment line?
No.
Because the car industry, I listen to a lot of progressive talk radio, and this very smart lady that does a show, she said they generate $21 billion in Social Security and Medicare taxes and $25 billion in federal income tax. Now, that's a lot of money.
Well, it's a tremendous amount of money. And then also think about this. If you let, for instance, just GM go down, you're going to have 1 to 2 million people who are going to apply for unemployment benefits. I mean, that will crush the economy.
I know. Our government just extended it, 6 or 7 weeks? They know people can't get jobs.
Right.
My daughter's roommate just lost her job at the newspaper down here, Sun Sentinel. They laid off 200 people, and unemployment's at a 7% high now down here in Florida.
Yeah, well, the print media is in a lot of trouble.
Well, it seems like everybody's in trouble. Citigroup and Mellon Bank, New York, they're laying off more people. What are we going to do with all these people unemployed?
Well, I think it's a good question. I know it, and that's why I think we critically need to shift our economy, and I think one of the places to go is green. I think that that's the place to go.
Yeah, we can do that. But in the meantime, I think we should support our American car or auto manufacturers. Because you know what? Do you remember back then when, during the Clinton administration, they sent representatives to Japan to try to get, they slapped tariffs on our cars going over there.
Right, right.
So what do they do now? Do they, want foreign cars coming over here? Are there tariffs on them?
You know, that's something I can't answer, because the only thing I know about this is, and I drive a foreign car, the only thing I know about it is that when the car is made, in my case it's German, when the car is made in Germany, it does not have the equipment on it to meet the EPA standards. So when it gets here, they transport the car, they put all that stuff on, and then it goes to the dealer, and then the dealer preps the car. So you get that plus a transportation charge charged to you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there are tariffs on incoming cars or not. I don't know about when we export to other countries, because there are cars that we make or that we have a hand in making that are in other countries that are very, very popular. One of them is the Ford Focus.
Mm-hmm. I do know in Korea, I found out yesterday, that they slapped some sort of tariff on our cars going into their country. That's the only thing I've heard, though. But you know what? I watched the questioning of our government. They questioned the CEOs about them not being responsible in the way they run a business.
Right.
But look at what we've done. We're $10 trillion into debt, and even from the Tom Hartman show, we're paying billions of dollars a year just on the interest in our loan. I mean, we don't do a very good job of running this.
Well, we don't do a very good job because if you don't respect government, how in the heck are you going to run it efficiently? And we've had an administration now for the last 8 years that didn't respect government. We've had leadership in the last 28 years mm-hmm. that didn't respect government, that wanted to kill government. And so look who's held what offices for the last 30 years, and how many times there have been Republican presidents versus Democratic presidents, and the fact that Congress was in Republican control from 1994 all the way to 2006, and now we're paying for all these misadventures. I mean, going to Iraq, first of all, was wrong. We were lied into that. Everybody knows this, except those people that are living in some kind of, Fox, EIB-manufactured, alternate universe. So everybody knows that that was wrong. Then we get over there, and what happens? Well, it's a holiday for contractors who are politically mm-hmm. connected. So they're running off with the taxpayer money.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to monologue. Go ahead.
Oh, the forces situation over in Iraq, that thing they're trying to run through Parliament, I think the Iraqi people are going to have more control over our troops and everything over there if this goes through. Bush wants it to go through because the forces.
Right, he does want that to happen. And there's another story that hasn't been covered very well by the media. Do you know that very, very quietly, the Maliki government has gone in and fired anybody who was involved in trying to clean up the corruption? And
that's
another step backwards. But right now we're so focused on the economy that those kind of stories don't get any play. Flo, thank you. Thanks so much, Jay.
Nice talking to you again.
Yeah, nice to talk to you too. Let's go to Irving in Boynton, Florida. Irving, hi, you're on.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I had seen a film entitled Who Killed the Electric Car?
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
It was put out by Chris Payne, the producer, and it was all about the General Motors cars, and this is in 1996. And it previewed at the Sundance Film Festival in 06. I've been on the computer for over an hour while I've been waiting for you to get on. And if you saw it, okay, so then you saw that the car was very popular. A good part of the film industry, actors and actresses, had them, and they were picketing because these cars were on rental only. And GM called them back. The people didn't own them, and they scrapped them. They showed them being crushed into cubes, and it's a shame. Now, this is about 10 years ago or more. So how come they're now coming out with this Volt and talking about the year 2010?
Because they're trying to cater to the marketplace. That's why. And I can't answer that because I'm not behind the walls or the office buildings in GM, and I can't answer that question. But I can tell you that there's been a lot of foolishness in that area with the oil companies and the car companies.
They've been
doing this for years. I mean, when I was a kid, when I was really young, four years old, five. I grew up in West Los Angeles. Anybody in West L.A. listening, I grew up near Roxbury Park. I remember down that street, there used to be a trolley car that ran, I believe, on electricity. And it would.
We had them in New York also.
Yeah, you could get on it, and it would take you all the way to the Santa Monica Beach. Then all of a sudden, one day, it was gone. And what's ended up happening is that they took them out to encourage people to buy automobiles and to use gasoline. And so they've been fooling with this stuff for a long, long time. And now I think it's starting to, it's starting to catch up to them. So that's the position they're in, and they just, you know, they, you know, no matter what you do, look, you can't fly for free, and no matter what you do, it always catches up with you, and now it's starting to catch up with these people. Irving, thank you. I appreciate
that. There are loads of electric car manufacturers throughout the world, including India, Citroën, in France.
Well, and we need to, and we have a few in this country, but they're not predominant right now, but they're at least out there. Tesla, I think, is one. Who you can't get any information from them. I have tried numerous times to book them on the show when I do my regular show here on AM 760, Progressive Talk in Denver. When I tried millions of times to get them on just to explain about the car. And one of the cars they have, which is in a Lotus Elise body, is all electric, and it's about $100,000. Well, not everybody's going to go out and pay $100,000 for that, but still. How about those people who do have that money? And they've got a pretty unique concept. You can put a solar panel on top of the roof of your garage, which charges up the system during the day. So when you come home at night, then you plug the car into it and you do it off the grid, which is another great idea and another great innovation. And I would love to get them on here and have them talk about it, but they seem to be resistant to give any information. The French also have an electric car, but it's very, very expensive. And then the other thing is hybrids are starting to make big inroads. I'm a big racing fan. I don't like NASCAR, but I like sports car racing, and I also like open wheel racing. And in the, I think it was like the last 12 hours of Sebring or whatever, they had a hybrid car that was running. Jay Marvin in for Tom Hartman. And this is the Tom Hartman Show, of course. And I'm glad you're along. And don't forget, too, that this is Air America Radio.
You're listening to Jay Marvin, filling in on the Tom Hartman Program.
Dancing along, working your woofers and tweeters. Jay Marvin in for Tom Hartman, who's on the Air America cruise. And thank you, Tom, for letting me sit in. Really appreciate that. 1-866-303-2270. We're talking about anything you want to talk about. We're mostly focused in on the auto industry because that's what you want to talk about. But you can do other things. You want to talk about widespread panic, that's fine with me. That's an inside joke between my producer, John, and myself. The show originating from AM 760 Progressive Talk. John is one of the biggest panic fans of all time. And I wish I had a band like that, that I was just that nuts about. Well, I guess I am. The Rolling Stones would be for me. Maybe. Maybe. And Graham Parsons would be somebody else that I'd be heavily into. Let's go to Patricia in Phoenix, Arizona, one of my favorite towns and the home of my favorite race car driver, Darren Law. Hi, Patricia.
Yay, I'm so glad to get on because the last couple of people have really set this up for me. This is what I think. And, of course, what do I know? I'm just a taxpayer.
Well, you know more than I do, probably.
I think we should bail them out. Not because they haven't misused every possible aspect of lobbying and et cetera, but because of all the people who are involved and that trickle-down effect to the rest of us who are all just sitting down here going, hey, where's my bailout? But this is the deal. Let's stipulate that they use this to revamp everything and make it all green and not only make everything they produce green, but then go back for the last 5 years and reconfigure every car they've ever done.
Well,
that would put everybody...
That would be really expensive, though, to pull that off.
Well, you know what? How's... You know, we have not even reached the middle of this crisis. Our government, those who are so knowledgeable and are supposed to know what's going on, they are 7 months to a year behind in what is really happening. They're not.
Well, that's because that's what they believe. It's like that, and I wish I had the audio of this, and I don't have it, but I wish I had it. That's like the Arthur Laffer debate, where he's debating this professor, and Laffer's saying, well, you know, nothing's going to happen, and blah, 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 and the economy's this, and the economy's that. And here we are a year later, and Laffer, who floats this Laffer curve, or the Laffler curve, or whatever the case it may be, maybe his name is Laffler, it turns out that he didn't know what he was talking about, and that these folks don't know what they're talking about. But I don't think you can go to the car industry and say, okay, you got to retool every car. I mean, that would be cost prohibitive.
So, gee, maybe that was extreme compared to what's going on, but what about just getting behind, making us all shareholders in a green endeavor?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right about that. I think it's 100% correct that now, if we ever want to get the car dealers, but the car companies who have fought against every initiative and have been dragging, kicking, and screaming into all of these things, then if now is the time, if we ever wanted to get a hold of them and carry out what you're talking about, Patricia, now's the time to do it.
Well, they've been allowed to do it. There's no transparency in our government. Everything falls apart, and then everybody is so in survival mode that they can't even think, let alone feed their children. So, gee, nothing's been working for a long time. Let's revamp.
I agree, 100%. Patricia, thank you. I appreciate the call. And Darren Law does live in Phoenix. And he's great in the Rolex Grand Am and also the American Le Mans series. Go, Darren. Okay, let's go to Mike in Los Angeles. Mike, hi.
Hi. You know, perspective is important. Just in the last year and a half, our government has already spent almost $5 trillion in bailouts, in bigger deficits, not interest on the debt, just in more spending. And this just isn't about taxpayers. This is opportunity cost lost. We've got about 60 million workers in America earning less than $10 an hour, no health insurance, no pensions, no job security, no advocate in Washington, disabled, elderly, single working moms, people of color, people getting cut off. And they don't have Lear jets to fly up to Washington and demand bailouts. So when you've got 60 million people in America, borderline skids of Haiti type of capitalism, what's another 3 million people to the mix? I think that
another 3 million people to the mix is first of all, it's another decidedly crushing blow to the economy. And number two, we're not juggling statistics around on paper here. We're talking about human beings, and you can't go to 3 million human beings and go, okay, fine, see ya, we don't care about you, and if you don't have a job, excuse me, how?
Daimler Chrysler, for example. Their biggest income in 2003 wasn't selling cars. It was trading currencies. Is that what we're doing?
No.
I mean,
No, that's not what we're doing. And what people are advocating, including myself, is that we buy into and have control on the board of the automobile companies. And by the way, if you're worried about the debt and about the debt that's been run up, if you read what Paul Krugman has to say, who's a Nobel Prize winner, he says, forget the debt. That's what he says. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate the call. J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman. And this is the Tom Hartman Show. And, of course, this is Air America.
This is J. Marvin, guest hosting on the Tom Hartman Program.
I've always wanted to say this on the radio, even though I don't necessarily believe that it's true. J. Marvin, the Sarah Palin of talk radio. I don't know how many of you saw that footage last night where she's just giving this interview and the guy is carrying these turkeys over to this machine that is beheading the turkeys. It's like, okay, A, Sarah Palin is really dumb. Or B, she surrounds herself with really dumb people. I mean, I couldn't believe that. And she acts oblivious as to what's going on. I mean, are those birds, like, not making any noise? I can't figure that out. J. Marvin in for Tom Hartman. 1-866-303-2270. We're talking about whatever you want to get into. But mostly we've been talking about the auto industry problem. Let's go to Jerry in Glendale, California. And, Jerry, I could be wrong about this, but there used to be a major dairy out there in Glendale. Was it Arden's? I'm not sure which dairy it was.
A major what?
Dairy. You know, like a dairy. You know what a dairy is?
Dairy?
Yeah.
Like producing milk?
Yeah. Used to be out there in Glendale years ago.
I don't think it's there anymore.
No, I think it's probably gone now, but it used to be Arden's or something like that anyway.
Oh,
I don't
wait,
know.
Wait. I remember that name.
Yeah, sure. Remember?
Well, I've been here for a decade, and I've never heard the name come up, so I bet it's gone.
Well, you know what? It's been exported overseas like everything else, and now they're creating it in India probably. All right. Anyway, never mind my attempt at humor. What's going on with you?
Well, you scared me when you called yourself the Sarah Palin of talk radio. I got a little nervous here.
I just couldn't help it.
But you have been making you sound intelligent and articulate, so I held on.
You betcha.
Jay. Maybe you could shed some light on something for me. Regarding all this bluster and everything coming out of the discussions with the big three, I don't understand why everybody's becoming a second guesser and there's so much scrutiny on these guys and what are they going to do with the money and do they deserve the money? We just gave untold billions to the banks with no, as far as I've known, no oversight, no ability to say, hey, what are we doing with it? What are we getting for our money?
Well, I think you bring up a really good point. I mean, Henry Paulson has totally and completely messed that situation up and then has moved the goalposts and the plan. And you're right. I mean, what did we get and why wasn't there much control? And it was another one of these cases of, okay, give us what we want or Armageddon's going to come. And we gave them what they want and we're still headed, downhill. And with the car companies, I think that the reason that they're asking these questions is because they have received loans, which is basically what we're talking about here. They've received loans before, and now they're back at the trough again asking for more, and the public is not in the mood to just hand them the money. The public wants questions answered, and so that's why you're seeing all this cross-examination.
Well, I mean, if any industry is going to get, you know, a helping hand here, shouldn't it be the industry that there's all these jobs and all these people who are making their living either directly or indirectly through the auto industry? And people are, I mean, didn't Mitt Romney just say let him go bankrupt?
Well, he wrote a piece
here's a guy that came out of the auto industry. I mean, he's.
Yeah, well, he wrote a piece in the New York Times saying that they should be allowed to go into Chapter 11 and then restructure, which is, that sounds good on the face of it, but the problem is that you're going to have, you're going to have the same players that you've got now, and that's not what needs to be done. What needs to be done is the whole thing needs to be overhauled, and it blows my mind when you turn on the TV and you see Richard Shelby, for instance, the senator from Alabama, and he's standing up there saying, well, you know, giving them the money, this is just isn't right, and okay, well, Mr. Shelby, I mean, you're not in Michigan, you're in Alabama, and then, you know what, it's going to bleed down into Alabama because you've got car dealerships there, and you've got people who work for those dealerships, and there are suppliers there, and there's goods and services surrounding the automobile industry that's being run into Alabama. Okay, great, then you can answer your constituents when all those folks are out of a job.
Yeah, I don't get this. And why isn't anybody talking about, you know, having some strings attached? You know, I'd love to see the executives, you know, the top executives of the companies, if they get all this money, say, great.
Well, they are talking
about
the
board of directors dump them.
Well,
I mean,
it's
their leadership that's put this industry into a hole.
I agree, but they are talking about strings being attached. And Nancy Pelosi said last night that and so did Harry Reid, that, look, we're not going to just give you the money. We want to see what your plan is. The thing that bothers me about that is that I don't want to know what their plan is. I want to dictate to them what our plan is. And then if they want the money, then they have to go along with what we want. If they don't want to go along with that, then fine. They're on their own. Or what we ought to do is we ought to take it away from them. Now, I know that that's very radical talk, but the end result is if you let them go, as I've been saying during this whole show, you're talking about 1 to 2 million people who are going to be out of jobs. Then on top of that, all right, let's say GM goes down and China decides to step in and buy GM. Okay, do you want China running GM? Do you want China running Ford? So in other words, are we going to wake up one day in America and there are no American-made cars? I mean, and I'm not talking about in plants in America. I'm talking about American ownership.
Exactly. Exactly, and I couldn't agree with you more. You know, you made a point earlier that I think connects with this. You said that you were talking about, you know, building up our economy, creating jobs by going into the green, by going green, to coin a phrase. I mean, isn't this a perfect opportunity to get an industry going green?
Yes.
You know, they've got the hybrid technology. Let's have them expand it. So it's not just this model here and that model there. They've got, Tom Hartman, and good on him, he pointed out that flex fuel technology, for a couple $100, they can make a car flex fuel compatible, or I don't know what the jargon is, but it can run on mixtures of ethanol.
No, that's what it's called. It's called flex fuel, and I'll tell you something else. There are experiments going on with ethanol and other ingredients because most, and I'm giving a plug for my favorite sport, but most of the big road racing organizations like American Le Mans and Rolex Grand Am and even the Indy people, they're all fooling with this too. They're all fooling with it. And as I mentioned before, and I was wrong about this, it wasn't Sebring, it was Road Atlanta. There is a company, and I can't remember what their name is, but they've got a hybrid race car that they're using. And if anybody knows anything about American Le Mans, they know that that's endurance racing, which means you run for like 6 hours, 7 hours straight, and they had pretty good luck with it. And they're talking about, you know, putting it in the 24 hours of Le Mans. So it can be done. It's just the thing is the auto industry has fought every inch of the way.
Yeah.
And so we get involved, then they can't fight anymore.
Exactly. I mean, why can't we say, okay, we'll give you the money, build cars that make sense, instead of cars that just line your pockets with profits.
We've got
flex fuel technology. We got biodiesel technology.
Right.
We've got all these technologies. Maybe we can light a fire under their butts, if I can say that, and get them headed in that direction, build the economy through creating those kind of jobs for the long run.
Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. You're so spot on. Jerry, thank you. I just thank you for the call. Really a good call. Let's go to Bill in Warren, Michigan. Bill, hi, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Listen, I saw the screener that, you know, I listen to both sides of this radio station, your side, and I listen to WJR in Detroit also. But, you know, the Rush Limbaugh's and them guys, they're so far out in the other field, they're not in the middle. And the morning show guys are more in the middle. They, you know, listen to both sides and that. So I listen to you a little bit, and I think you're the same way. So the point is, you know, these car industries are not looking for a bailout. And they keep terminology of bailout. It's not a bailout. All they're asking for is some money.
Yeah, they're asking for loans.
Okay, that's what I'm saying, a loan. And Chrysler did it and paid them all back with money extra. So, you know, you got to trust these guys. This is our last resort of American-made products in the United States that has any clout. I mean, years ago, 60s and that, we gave our radios, our TVs, and all the other crap across the country to, you know, Japan and China and stuff. We got to keep this stuff in the United States.
So if you sit down and think about it, how many things do you have in your house that are made in the United States that you use? Majority of what we use is either assembled in China or comes from Japan. So you got a good point on that. As far as leaving things the way they are, or as far as leaving, you know, we got to trust these guys. okay, I understand what you're saying, but I don't trust Rick Wagner, and I don't trust the heads of GM and Ford, because if they had their acts together, then we wouldn't be sitting in the place we're sitting in. I think that they need to go away, but we need to preserve the institutions of American-made vehicles. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Jay Marvin in for Tom Hartman, and this is the Tom Hartman Show. And, of course, this is none other than Air America Radio.
You're listening to guest host Jay Marvin, filling in for Tom Hartman.
Jay Marvin in for the very kind and gracious Tom Hartman, who's off on the Air America cruise. So I'm sitting in today. We're into our final segment. 1-866-303-2270, rather. And we've been talking about the automobile situation all morning long, and that's fine with me. I wanted you to get on today and talk about whatever it is that you are interested in, because I think that's what makes talk radio pretty unique. Is that you can get on here, unlike in other formats, and express how you feel. I don't care whether you're conservative, liberal, or in the middle. I don't care what it is. Bring it on, because everybody's always welcome. That's how I look at it. All right, let's go to Ralph in Northampton, Massachusetts. Ralph, hi.
Hi, Jay. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. What about you?
Well, pretty good. I don't like the economy, but I think we're making a big mistake with blaming things on the automobile industry. They've made their mistakes, but they're not the problem. We've got a whole economy, and what could happen if they don't do something? I think they ought to give them the money now to help them out and then worry about the details later. Because if all the ancillary businesses go out of business, that's going to be 2 million people out of work. And, you know, we have a steel industry that depends on automobiles. We have glass companies that depend on automobiles made in America and tires and all those other companies. So if we blame everything on that, they're not the things to blame. And that's
a small part of it. I think you're partially right. And I think you're partially right in the fact that, even if they were healthy financially, they'd be hurting anyway, because car sales is down about 34 or 35% in the country right now. But the other thing is even if the economy were good, they would be in trouble because they have made poor decisions. And giving people money who make poor decisions is not going to change anything. Where you and I think would disagree is that I'm all for helping them out. But I want accountability out of them, and I also want us to have an input and a say into how they use that money. So I would like to see us get a place on the board, even if it means we have to buy shares to get in. But I'm not for handing them $25 billion and just going, like, here, spend it where you think you should.
No, I'm not. I agree with you on that, but I think we need to give it to them now. And then work out the details later.
Well, I think we should work out the details before giving it to them, but we do need to get it going. But the problem we have right now is we've got a leadership vacuum. We've got a lag in what's going on because, obviously, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, hello, there's nobody home there, and there's nobody home right now in the Congress, and we're having to sit here and go through the painful process of waiting for January 20th to roll around when the adults will come in and take over from the fiscally irresponsible children and try to turn this place around, turn this great country around. And so that's what we're suffering from. We're suffering from a leadership vacuum.
Well, that's another problem. But they could come and do it if they had to.
Well, I think that they need to.
My fear is if they don't, and this thing, we're in a bad recession. It had nothing to do with just the automobile industry.
No, I understand what you're, I understand your point there, but what I'm saying to you is they would be in trouble regardless because they have made bad decisions and haven't read the room and haven't seen where the marketplace is going, and so therefore they would need help either way. It's just that the economy and the situation that the economy in aggravates their situation. Ralph, thank you. I thank you for the call. See, I almost said I appreciate the call, but I didn't do that. Let's go to Dick in Seattle. Dick, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, Jay, another open wheel speedway race car fan here.
Oh, man, all right. What are you into?
I'm into sprint cars, midget supermods.
Oh, good.
Real deal.
Oh, good for you. Well, wait a
minute.
Well, wait a minute. Well, wait a minute, though. You're going to rule out Formula One?
I'm into to speedway competition pretty much.
All right.
I call it professional racing. Hey, look, you know, it's great sport to pick on our car company CEOs, but I think the real problem here is that Phil Graham and his friends deregulated and blew up the stock market, and then the futures commodity market, and that dried up our credit and loans, and then we've driven up the oil and gas prices, so that's become a problem with the commodities. So we have a government problem here first, then maybe a management problem, which is all too typical, of course, of free market capitalism, but it's not the first issue. It's the government's regulation that we fail on here. You know, and as for ethanol, you know, as with high commodity price costs, you know, we're having to pay for it now as much as we are extra with gasoline. But the real problem there with the E85 ethanol is that the oil company distribution is not there. They're obstructing distribution.
Well, that's one of the reasons why we got to get them out of the way. And as far as what you were talking about, you know, sport of beating up on the car companies, I don't think we're really beating up on them. I think what a lot of people are doing is that they want accountability instead of just handing them money. Now, what you brought up about Phil Graham and the Glass-Steagall Act and all of that going on and all of this deregulation, to me, at least the way I see it, I don't know about anybody else, but I think the whole Reaganomics deregulation argument is dead. Because
yep.
If you look at anything that has gone through this, from the power companies like Enron to the airlines to broadcasting to whatever you want to look at, deregulation has helped to consolidate or destroy those industries. And nobody is talking about overregulation. What we're talking about is prudent regulation, which is what we need. We need prudent regulation to make sure that these folks cannot have the doors wide open to walk through them and steal everything they can get their hands on. Wouldn't you agree with that?
The labor costs here are much higher because we got no health care. $1,500 up.
That's
to
right.
$1,500 extra a car.
Well, it's $2,800 actually now.
Really?
So, yeah, you're right about that, too. I mean, health care. Yeah. You know what this boils down to? I'll tell you what this boils down to. We sit here and act like, oh, they're wrong in Europe. And, boy, I don't want Europe, Euro socialism here. Well, wait a minute. If they're so wrong, well, how come they don't have the same problems we do? Okay.
It.
I mean, if they're so wrong, why is it that our health care is so lousy? Dick, thank you. I appreciate the call. And when I say it's lousy, I don't mean there are people out there, caregivers and doctors and I'm just talking about the structure of it, that we spend more and get less. It's been really great to sit in for Tom Hartman, and Tom will be back on Monday. Thank you so much. You can check me out on am760.net or go to my blog, jmarvinblog.com. And with that, I hope you have yourselves a great weekend. This is the Tom Hartman Show, and this is Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.